This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Welcome, AfterBuzzers. You are watching the after show for American Crime Story, The Johnny Versace Story, Episode 2, Manhunt. Stay tuned for more.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
What's up, AfterBuzzers?
Hey.
We are back. Episode 2. Exciting episode. And what great music, right?
We're jamming. Yes.
Yeah. We were jamming the entire episode, right?
It really was.
I'm Shaka Smith. You guys can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat at Shaka Strong.
That music is really good. Jeffrey, can we pull that up a little louder? Just to... Yeah. Oh, my God. Right in the soul.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm Ronnie Jr. My social media is at RandomlyRJ.
Hey, AfterBuzzers, I'm Russell Ray. You can find me all across the internet at Russell Ray Silva.
Hey, AfterBuzzers, you can find me on Instagram at Bonjour Juliette. That is Bonjour, which is hello in French, and Juliette, my name.
Wow, well, I guess the episode started off not as a happy note, but the music was incredible. But I guess we started off, with this diagnosis for Johnny about HIV.
Yes.
And what did you guys think of that opening scene? I love that story he told about his older sister, which, you right. know, I had no idea about.
Well, I think it told us a lot of things. First off, we actually talked about it in the last episode. Mm-hmm. You said that they might not allude to it, that he has HIV, but it was kind of like a family secret. We don't really know. So right off the bat in this episode, you're like, oh, okay, so they're fully going with this storyline. So yeah. I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah.
I thought it was also really cool how, I believe it was March of 1994, and mm-hmm. obviously when we as people think about this subject matter today, even in 2018, we've got so much more knowledge, and right. we sort of forget, you know, how people felt back then, the fears, and, you know, just the way the government really wasn't taking care of this tragic disease. So I thought, loving the opening scene, because I really felt... that it took you to that place. Like, yeah. you were able to visually see Edgar Ramirez's amazing performance of feeling how Gianni Versace would feel. But definitely information I didn't know for sure. I know we alluded to it, like, last week, but I thought it was done really well.
Yeah, they brought out, I guess, the present moment of HIV at that time was that it was something that was like, you don't have much longer to live. Like, you felt like we weren't on the cutting edge of technology quite then.
Right.
So yes. I thought they played that pretty well.
And Go ahead.
Oh, I went back to the moment. I don't know if you guys remember this, but back when Oprah Winfrey did a show on this, and there was a man, and this is before anybody knew how HIV spread.
Oh.
And it really took me back to that mindset. He had jumped into a community pool because after they had diagnosed him, he wanted to die. And everyone in that community just went off on this man because everyone thought that they were going to get HIV. Well... Mm. Push come to shove, no one got it.
Yeah.
So years down the line, you know, obviously but unfortunately the disease took over his body, and these people were coming back on the Oprah show later when she did like a revamped version of it, you know, 20 years later, and they're apologizing to his sisters, like, you know, we're sorry, we had no idea how this disease was, and like mm-hmm. we were just scared at the time. And if you really go back and think about that moment, you have to imagine how Versace must have felt in order to get that diagnosis.
And yeah. while things were sensationalized, you know, because anything like what had happened, you know, would be a big Oprah story. Mm-hmm. I also think about, I just think about so much. It was just done so well that I really don't want us to think of it as a 2018. The knowledge we have, I want us to look back as,
yeah.
holy shit, you know, you didn't know how you were going to react at that time.
Right.
I mean, Magic Johnson yeah. barely announced his status, what, a year prior or something yeah. like that? Like, it was still a lot of craziness. Yeah. And they, I mean, sensationalized, as I was just saying, they said years before, in the early 80s, they were calling it gay cancer. So, like, there's yeah. just so much that people hadn't resolved with, and clearly we're seeing that Gianni Versace also had that same fear. And to look at his sister was really, like, touching. It shows that his family is still like a really big pivotal part of his life.
It right. is. And it also mm-hmm. shows his outlook on life, right? Because he yeah. was saying, when I saw her dead with all the roses, I figured if you get sick, there's a way to recover, which is most people would become completely cynical, rightfully so. And so I thought that was very intriguing. You're like, oh, that's who he is.
Huh? Well, no, I think that's when it destroyed his
idea.
Oh,
I didn't understand. Never mind.
No, I think that's when it destroyed his idea, but it was a beautiful moment. That, right. Because as a child, you don't even embrace the concept of death until it is staring at you. Right.
Yeah, and I think it was a good touch point for the episode because, like, when we watched last episode, episode one, we felt like we were getting so much information, and it just kind of like smacked at least me as a viewer in the face with like, okay, let's get into episode two. So it was done well.
And yeah, speaking of that, I thought this really showed you Donatella and Antonio's relationship because I had wondered, she was a little harsh to him in the when Johnny died, but now you see where that harshness came from.
Right. She accused him of giving HIV to Johnny. And
she did do that, did
essentially.
She?
But I was with her on it.
Wait,
was,
why were you with her though?
Because for me, what she was saying was that Johnny only wanted to be with Antonio. He didn't want to be with anybody else. He was only indulging Antonio's whims.
But that's her perspective.
But
and Antonio did say he's not an angel. Also, right?
Yeah, I think I believed her perspective based on what was playing out on screen because it felt like he was not wanting to be a part of. Like based on what I saw on screen, it felt like Antonio was wanting to do that and Johnny wasn't, but he was willing to indulge it.
It felt like true brother sister interaction, like that struggle, like because she has to make resolve too that like it's not you can't blame anybody for the lifestyle that your brother is in. And by the way, you can't even blame Gianni and Antonio for being in that situation. This again is 1994. People are not getting married legally, so these I remember watching an HBO doc, but it was also a play before The Normal Heart, and it was right when they were discovering AIDS, and they were talking there was all these men with the gay men's health crisis, and they were talking about like, oh my gosh, why aren't you guys cool in it? There's a sexual liberation that comes from wanting to be free. So when this gay cancer comes, you can't expect guys to just chill. I'm just trying to give you guys what I feel is the mindset as to why it's, I'm not saying it's bullshit for Donatella to say, hey, cool it, but it's like that's not in your world, so you don't really know what these two men were going for. Was that a lot?
Well, but don't you feel, okay, if there's a couple, say it's a guy and a girl, and the guy's like, I'm into threesomes, and he wants the girl to be with other girls, and she catches something as a result of doing so, wouldn't her brother or sister say, hey, you did this because you opened it up into this world?
Just watch the HBO thing, Normal Heart's a really great movie. Julia Roberts is the doctor in it, and even me, like as a judgmental person, even me, I was like, God, if I was in that moment, if I was that young, my 20-year-old gay man, like I'd feel like I'd want to cool it, but you got to see where these people are coming from. This is a time where like, acceptance was just happening, so... And marriage isn't anything. But Donatella did say, oh, why can't you get married, whatever, have a family? It's like, could they? Could they actually?
Fun fact, real quick. Normal Heart was directed by Ryan Murphy.
The Normal Heart, which was originally a play. I've watched it like 16 times. It's a fantastic production. Yeah, Jim Parsons is in it. Matt Bomer's in it. Highly recommend it if anyone wants to like further this subject matter because it opened up my mind on so many levels too. But I didn't mean to be like rude about it, but I just want that viewpoint.
But couldn't it be the same? Like would it matter? Is what I'm saying. Like people. I know couples that have open relationships, gay and straight. So, like, regardless, wouldn't you feel as a sibling of someone that was reluctant to do it, but they just love the partner to do it? Wouldn't you say, hey, well, it makes sense. She's upset.
She thinks he's being influenced.
Yeah, I mean,
if you say it that way, that's fair.
That's all. Based on what I saw on screen, it seemed that Johnny didn't want to do it. But
that was a good way of putting it. Mm-hmm. But you have to think about it. If you're the power player in this relationship, you're pretty much going to call the shots. So
you mean, but who's the power player?
Johnny. He's the one who's running the show.
Except
he has the
he's
money,
in love
he
with
has the houses. He is, so he can have anyone he wants. So
maybe.
You know what I think?
And let's take this to the chat room.
Maybe.
Oh, by the way, while we talk about the chat room, I was really impressed. It was about 7,000 views on the last, at least on the YouTube alone. I'm sure the iTunes was even stronger. So people are talking about this conversation. And by the way, we just try to say a lot of stuff on our opinion and our mind because, that way we bring different points. I'm not saying you're wrong.
Oh, no.
I'm probably wrong.
No. The whole point is looking at something with different viewpoints.
Right.
And so that's why we're here. Yeah.
It's true because it's hard for not to look at it with my 2018 point view, and it's true, it's kind of nice to bring it back to like, oh, that time period and be like, huh, it's different. It's true, even when we were in the trailer, I was saying, I'm like, oh, I hate this, I don't want to be judgmental. I can't talk to
you. Don't want to be that either.
Yes, I don't want to be judging them, and because it's true, any type of relationship, the only people who can understand it are the people who are in it, right?
Yeah.
I was just saying, like, oh, it's, I just find that a little sad personally, because I feel like they just could be a have a stronger bond if they were, you know, a monogamous family.
Yeah. There's a, I won't jump ahead, but there's a part at the end of the episode that I want to, you know, bullet point at the end towards what you're talking about. That's cool. The club scene. But we'll get to that later.
And I did actually want to talk about some of the shots that they're shooting. I mean, for me, it got nostalgic. All my shots of Miami were beautiful.
Yeah.
But there was that one poignant shot of that the ashes in that box, and they're going back. And it's, you know,
in the present time.
Yeah. Right. And just watching it just on the chair, but not, you know, what did you guys feel about just the way they're shooting it and that, the kind of emotion that alone is evoking?
I mean, you're traveling with, it's really morbid to put it this way, but you're traveling with your sibling in a box.
Yeah.
And what was once here is now gone so instantly. And I can only imagine what was going through Donatella's mind, because like I told you guys last episode, they got the body back in less than 24 hours, and the body was cremated in less than 72 hours because they wanted to cover up the whole HIV thing. And now we're here, obviously in 2018, we all know it. But at that time, how could you look at something and think, wow, this once was and now we're here. What's going to happen? Where are we at now?
To what you're saying about it being touching, what I think was interesting is when you asked that question a second ago, I'm like, oh my gosh, Lord forbid anything like that happened to someone in my family or friends or yours as well. But then it's another element of it is like moving fast because of what they were trying to cover up. And then the other element of it being, it's like he's Versace, that's him, but it's also like this business. So I think you have to operate in a much different manner. So while it would be somber for me to be in that jet, that would be nice, but in that jet... It's we just have to put it in the goggles of like her brother mourning process is going to be way different because business is so attached to it too. Yeah. But with that said, it was shot very well.
It was the scene itself just jarred you because you don't expect to be taking your loved one back home in that manner.
Yes.
What else did we have? There's so much. Cunanan. I mean, this was just like how he became charming and scary all at once. Maybe that was the beauty or dark beauty of this character. What did you guys think about, I guess, his interaction from his best friend to the lady? He's telling lie after lie after lie. What did you feel about the way they're revealing more of his personality?
It's nuts.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
What is there to say? Like I've said before, or, you know, stated before and expressed, what psychopaths are we walking amongst that we don't know about? Who have we passed in a store?
And that's why you don't trust anybody.
I barely even trust myself.
True.
How am I supposed to trust anybody else? But it's just, wow. I mean,
we were even creeped out a little bit because we were almost drawn into the charmingness of it, the character. Then you remember he's insane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, what he's doing, great. I mean, I don't know the most, I don't know all the terms within acting, but it just is really refreshing within the character of Darren Criss to play Andrew Cunanan, that it's like we're getting so many sides of him. In first episode, we only got kind of this like playful, whatever. But now we're getting charming mixed with psychopath. And then later on in the episode, when he meets Ronnie for the first time, it's like I felt like there was a lot of real Andrew Cunanan in there underneath the manipulator.
Yeah.
So like as an actor, again, I didn't study acting or anything like that, but I was really respectful of like, holy shit, because he's doing all of that well, which makes it look so easy as us viewing it, but it's probably very hard to convey, and he did it really well.
Because he conveys it, he makes it believable, because to make a character like that believable is difficult.
I mean, so many layers. You guys are saying it. It's crazy how you find yourself drawn to him. Like, he's obviously terrible, but there's something so magical about him. And, you know, he's doing these crazy scenes, and we're dancing along, and he's a murderer, but we're having a good time with it, and you know, I'm enjoying it.
Well, that's also more a credit to the way that's shot and the production or whatever. But.
And the music. They knew if they put some good music in this episode, it couldn't lose.
Yeah. How do you feel about the timeline? Because I guess we start back up in May of 1997, once we see Cunanan again, and that's after he murdered, I guess it's Lee Miglin is the name.
Right. Yeah.
So I believe that was, from what I had researched, the third person he killed. Because I think the last person he killed before Versace was, I believe, possibly even the truck owner. So you know how we saw the truck and he was changing the whatever? Changing the plates, yeah. So literally, as you're watching, you're seeing him like, oh, all cool, Andrew Cunanan. But it's like literally, if I'm correct when I say that, forgive me if I'm wrong, but I think he had just killed the person who had that vehicle because that was a New Jersey situation, and that's right before he drove to Miami.
And how creepy was it? I mean, when they're playing Glory, it's because he hears his name on the radio and they're looking for him, and he gets that big creepy smile on his face and he starts to turn up the music.
And we all felt bad. I felt bad. Like, because we were actually like in the moment of the music, but we're like, this is... It made me think it was...
Right.
It ain't right. Well, it made me... I told Shaka, I was like, oh, when we watched American Crime Story, you know, the OJ one, it was a different beast because here we're like seeing the players that are no longer... You know, we didn't see Nicole Brown and, you know, what she was doing with the waiter or whatnot, you know, so it's...
I think what they're doing wonderfully is almost matching the viewer's experience to the experience you would have if you met Cunanan, where you're charmed and you're feeling, oh, wait, why am I rooting for you? Wait, why do I feel like I'm, you know? I think I felt as if I was... meeting Andrew Cunanan and going through that emotional roller coaster of trying to figure him out, but being charmed and being repulsed at the same time.
I loved the way, you know, we met Ronnie, the character Ronnie, and he was, you know, of course, had his share of issues, but I loved how he was beginning to uncover Andrew Cunanan, partially because Andrew Cunanan gave him the most honesty out of all the other people. But still, all in still.
Yeah. And, right? But he accepted him, too, because at the end of the day, you could tell that he almost immediately knew this guy was lying, but he found someone who was a friend to him.
Right.
And probably because of his own diagnosis, maybe he was short on friends and felt lonely, but he felt they had a connection.
And he's on drugs. Like, I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm not going to kick it with a crackhead. No kicking in crackheads here.
Okay.
I'm all focused on the friendship, the beauty, the magic. He's like, and he's on drugs.
Okay, but I don't want to laugh at people who get caught up in situations either. I'm just saying that very also true. Shows the level of where Andrew Cunanan could live in that space, you know, as a wanted man and who would befriend him or whatever.
It's always the outcasts. They find each other somehow.
And we had that crazy scene of Cunanan. It's funny because I don't know how much of it's true to fact, but I actually found myself so engrossed with the story that I just gave up on caring what was factual.
Very
I just wanted
true.
To hear what this story was.
Mm.
But yeah, that crazy scene with the duct tape.
Oh my gosh! Yeah. I will never look at duct tape the same.
Well,
in my life.
I almost thought the guy was going to be grateful for it because he'd have this new appreciation for life.
Can we play, if Jeffrey can in the booth, can we play a little bit? The song was Easy Lover, I guess. Is that like Genesis or something? Oh my God. And like you say, it was a horrible scene and it just shows his craziness. But when the music's pumping.
He has some moves too.
Who's that?
You see that? what's his name? The actor, the main actor?
Oh, Andrew Cunanan. Yes, with the pink panties. He was doing it. Yeah.
He was.
What's the name, Ronnie?
Easy Lover. I guess that might be like Genesis.
And he's yelling at him, take it, accept it.
He wanted him to indulge in it.
Oh my
it was
God.
Almost part life coaching. At one point, I thought,
I've never seen that in a curriculum before.
Oh my God.
Well, here's what I thought was going to happen. I thought once the guy could breathe again, he'd be so appreciative of life. And then he put on the wedding ring. I thought he was going to call his wife and like be like, I'm coming home. I thought he would realize, oh, you know, life is so precious.
Oh, do you hear the music,
he's definitely
though?
Creeped out. And I think we've...
Hey,
I mean, how do you not after this, right?
Oh my God.
What
gosh.
I loved about the scene. Oh, there goes the TV.
But now you remember the duct tape. Yeah.
No. Okay, I thought he was going to die. I was like, oh, he's dead for sure. This is first murder. Here he is.
What I thought, you guys, and this may just be going ahead because I've kind of found out when the murders happened, I knew that that murder didn't exist. Mm-hmm. So I was going in and saying, okay, I know he's not going to murder him. But what was so cool is that, not cool, but like, following how great they're showing this Andrew Cunanan character is it showed this other psychopath side of him. And also, like, the idea of, like, a psycho killer is... I hate to like say it, but like layered, you know?
Yeah.
So only because I knew that wasn't a murder, because I knew he didn't murder anyone in Miami, I was like, what is going to happen? Because it looked like he was about to kill him.
Yeah.
And the fact that he didn't, it just showed us yet another side of his like cocky, arrogant, fun dancing. That was fun dancing, but it showed that other side. And oh, I mean, I'm in on episode two.
Oh, yeah. Or that scene when he walks into the club. And it was almost as if he shut down. He just starts telling this guy all these lies. He's like, what do you do? And he just starts spewing all the different things.
Well, he
like,
opens with a great opener.
Yeah. What was that again? Murder?
He was
something?
Like, what do you do? I'm a serial killer.
That's what it was.
I would swipe right.
And you know what? I could definitely see him saying that in a club. Like, because who are you going to take serious if someone says, what do you do? I'm a serial killer.
And then he followed up with Banker, which I'm
Tinder
like...
Tinder and all them things. They're doing that, yeah.
No.
And then he followed up with Banker, which made me remind me of... What was it? What was that movie with Christian Bale? plays the banker.
I forget.
Well, banker, American Psycho.
American Psycho.
Such a good movie.
It totally gave me American Psycho flashback where he goes, oh, murders and executions. Oh, murders and acquisitions. Yeah.
Well, a serial killer is a banker.
Yeah.
Because, right? I mean, like, they can just charge you all kinds of fees. They can get 22% interest on your credit card.
$35.
Yep, there it is. Number one. Number two, let's go back to, like, the whole situation where they're in the bedroom. First of all, this should be a lesson for anybody who's watching this. If you're looking for a daddy, you could be a psychopath. And if you're a daddy and you're looking for someone younger, they could be a psychopath. So don't get into any of that stuff.
Well, also, when someone pulls out the tape, I feel like, do you see how many layers there was of tape? I feel like there would have been one moment where it was like, okay, a little too much tape.
Yeah, yeah.
You can play with some tape, but like that's a little
like,
too
what's
much.
What's the safe word here?
Right.
With any kind of tape.
I know, but there's got to be a limit.
This is nuts.
Oh my gosh. And let's talk about how even he takes it off. We see it towards the end.
Yeah.
Andrew puts it on him, on himself. And he takes it off like it's nothing.
That was
it's
like his
tape.
Specialty thing. It was like his duct tape fetish. Bizarre.
Oh, you know what? Another interesting thing about that is it showed how much Andrew Cunanan was in ecstasy in all these moments because, like, that dancing around. And even before he started taping him up, I think it was before he taped him up, he said, like, oh, so where do you work or who do you own? Like, he damn near said, who do you own? Like, he was very much like whatever he was going to do, he wanted to know how much power this man had so he could switch the power shift.
Right.
Exactly. And we saw that a little bit when he talked to his friend and he said, oh, he's the kind of man I want to be or like I could have been.
Right.
And oh, when he's talking about Versace.
Yeah.
Yeah. But showing that, and I thought that was a pivotal part. Obviously, we like the fun part of the music and the dancing and everything. And it is, we're sad about things, you know, all of what Cunanan did. But it showed so much about his psyche right there. Probably one of the best scenes in the show.
Yeah, I think beyond anything, what I realized was what low self-esteem he had. He always wanted to take the place of others that achieved things he thought he could have, but just did not.
And
achieve.
A great way to conquer low self-esteem is to be like a badass.
Yeah.
I mean, it is.
Yeah.
You know?
And to feel like, oh.
I mean, no, you don't agree? Like, why do you give me the smirk?
It's good more than that.
No, but don't you think people, life, I feel like you've constantly seen people who, they are very dark and insecure, so what do? They snap into a whole different
and
vibe.
And he went for notoriety.
I'm being serious.
You should definitely embrace your insecurities or whatever that there is, and you should conquer them and try to overcome them by grabbing them right by the horns and challenging the most powerful players.
Yeah. But I think he did it, obviously in the wrong way. I don't think the way he went about it was so great. But I think some people do look for notoriety and they don't care how they get it, and that in of itself is achievement. And if you get it through murder, he just loved hearing his name on the radio. You could see the glee that he took from that, right?
Yeah, I mean, there was a reason they probably had that song, Gloria, for such a long time, because it showed, like, again, another version of his ecstasy or his accomplishment, his win.
Well, he was obsessed with fame. He wanted to be famous. Yeah. That has come to surface. Was it fame or was it power? He wanted to be famous.
I think
Because fame wasn't as big as it is these days.
Like, I think it was bigger. I think it's completely opposite
because I think reality television has bridged the gap between a regular person and a celebrity.
There are people with millions of followers on Instagram. We don't know who they are. But like,
you
had millions of followers in 2000, people knew who you were.
Yeah.
So you guys think he wanted to be famous or he wanted to have power over someone?
I think he associated being famous with being powerful. Yeah. I think they're kind of one of the same.
I think he thought fame was achievement. So I thought if he got famous, he thought that meant he accomplished something in the world.
And I think at that time, too, fame and power were complete synonyms. There weren't famous people who weren't powerful.
True. Right.
Mm. Whereas, like Shaka said, there are influencers now who might not have the same level of power that like celebrities had.
Right. Exactly. Millions of followers and they work at CVS and CVS is a great job. But, you know,
that's it.
You're like, wait a minute.
Benefits.
Don't talk about CVS. Discount
prescriptions. Okay.
And again, Penelope, I saw some in the chat talk about Penelope Cruz. Her acting was absolutely amazing. I definitely think she'll be in the award season for sure.
I hope so. She deserves it. Yeah.
She was on the Ellen show and she had to, okay, so they practiced her English, right? And then they practiced her English with Donatella because Donatella has a very distinctive accent when she speaks with her Italian dialect. So then she had to practice English with Donatella's dialect version of English.
Mm.
So she had to completely change her own accent because she lives in Spain full time.
Yeah.
From being Spanish to transition to American, but then Italian-American with a heavy accent.
And it's so, really, I mean, as an outsider, obviously, I don't know the Italian-American accent perfectly, but it seems like on point to me.
She really nailed that character
so well.
And she's also making it her own, which is really great. And I think you guys touched upon it, that this show, yes, it is a true story, and we are watching it to learn about it, but it's also an entertainment show. Yeah. And so that's why I think it's really great to come into this with an open eye and just kind of like, yes, we're here to learn, but we're also here to be entertained.
Yeah. That's one thing I like about Ryan Murphy's shows too, is even when his shows have a male lead, the breakout is always a woman. Because you think about Sarah Paulson for Crime Story, and then American Horror Story, it's always... I just think he really knows how to write well for women, which I think can be rare for male showrunners.
That's great. Yeah. Great point, Jeff.
Like, Penelope just been killing it.
She really did.
Should we go into predictions?
I think we got a little bit more.
I think we want
a couple things. I wanted to ask you guys what you thought. This is a brief one. It's just Andrew Cunanan's interaction with Ronnie. I guess we've already sort of talked about that. But let's... Go ahead. Did you have something?
Now I'm just remembering the one I thought surprise of the film, or the show, was the hotel reception. I loved her interaction with Cunanan and just showing again a little bit of the layers of manipulation behind it.
Right, because he's got a whole backstory on like who he fake is.
Yeah, yeah. Like from France and
with a passport and everything. Yeah. I said, "Well, how'd you do that?"
And that's what kind of confused me. And I asked you guys what you thought. It confused me, and that's why I had said what I said earlier, that we finally saw Andrew Cunanan giving a version of himself mixed with psychopath. Because before we saw the lies, which is a whole different part of you, and then we saw his truth, and then we saw a psychopath. But when he met Ronnie, he was cruising Ronnie at the hotel, met him, and then like I felt like some of the things he said to him, he did say within truth. I mean, he said in San Diego, I used to work at a AIDS healthcare, establishment. And then he talked about, oh, I lost my best friend and my longtime lover. Now, here's where the mix happens, because that does happen. We'll see it later on the show. But it wasn't through HIV. So he was weirdly giving a comfort to Ronnie, like to befriend him, because that's what he was talking about. He goes, oh, by the way, I lost my friend and my longtime lover. And that's why Ronnie goes, played by Max Greenfield or whatever, he goes, the same year? Because he thought that was odd. Yeah, he's like, yeah, I lost him this year. Yeah. Well, we'll find out later that it's it's part of his killing spree. So that really was the first time, and the viewers could be, you know, could correct me if I'm wrong, but it was the first time we saw him being Andrew Cunanan mixed with psychopath. It was very weird and hard to watch, yet very good.
Yeah.
Sorry if that was too heavy again.
Well, going back to his murders and everything, when we touch on the detectives entering Miami for the first time, they only have 10 flyers.
Yeah, and that
after he was on America's Most Wanted. That's ridiculous.
And we see now why she was so upset that first episode. Because I was saying that first episode, she was really upset about the flyers. But I was like, you know, hindsight's 20/20. But she was upset because she had talked about it before and was like, let's flyer these areas. But I guess to their credit or to their defense, they thought he wouldn't be out in South Beach looking for anybody, that he was like discreetly meeting with these older men.
Okay, but Miami and Fort Lauderdale are not very far from each other.
Oh, I mean, it was the wrong move. Like, it was a bad judgment call. But like,
because I mean, you can go on LinkedIn and if you search Miami anything, it's like Miami's last Fort Lauderdale.
Oh, yeah, so it's right there.
It's now one.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but if you're on America's Most Wanted,
you would think you should.
Why would you not
plaster
this poster? It should be like a flyer party. Yeah. Just give them out to everybody.
But I think again, it's a little bit what we talked about. A, the stigma. Like, he was, even though he was one of the most wanted, he wasn't their priority, you know. And I think that was part of it as well.
That's what Ricky Martin been clearly saying on his interviews. He's like, "Oh, it was a gay murder spree, and people weren't necessarily paying attention." That's hard for people to hear, but it very well could have been.
Yeah,
and not necessarily that they were articulating it, but like that was just kind of the logic that was going through their mindset. And I think that was a type of like, I guess, discrimination you had back then.
Just stepping into discrimination for a minute in the gay culture is just. It's barely coming to the surface where we're reaching some sort of equality, you know. And then I don't know how many Trump supporters we have, but then you have a backlash of something so petty as in, you know, someone wanting to honor our country by serving in the military and any of that stuff, and then they get revoked.
Yeah.
Well, and that's why I said when Donatella judges just from her own personal lifestyle of what her brother is going to do, it's like, I understand the compassion, but, you know, when Versace was a little boy and whatever age he discovered who he was, there wasn't like this, what she's saying, hey, this is what you should just do, have a family, that wasn't allowed. So when you're at a certain age and this becomes your life, I mean, even though it seems so easy for you to be the counterpart, like the heterosexual counterpart, it may not be so easy for you to say, well, God, why are you guys all, you know, promiscuous? You know, you just can't speak to it because it's not what it is. If a kid's born today, great, this kid could be gay by, you know, whatever, 12 years old, and he'll know, or she, or gender nonconforming, that they can do whatever they want. And that's a freedom that Gianni did not have. So I get very protective of that.
But there were gay monogamous couples.
Yeah, but there wasn't legalized marriage.
There have been gay monogamous couples throughout history, though.
I know, but you're not, and I love that you're being like passionate and sweet about it. But like, you're not speaking to like what that could do to someone's psyche and why relationships are a little more accepted.
I agree, but to me, it seems like he was the guy that would have had the monogamous relationship, whether it was now or in 1900. Or, you know what I mean? I'll pick a random date.
1995.
What else do you guys like?
I think we just have to talk about a little bit of the fabulosity of them recreating all those great runway moments. And that was.
Well, wait a minute. Oh. And we like totally missed this whole part, and I can't believe I just barely thought of this right now. Like Ricky Martin's butt. Okay, well, I know everybody in the chat room probably wants to hear about Ricky Martin's butt.
This is nice.
Did you do a proper analysis? Let me see in your notes.
No, I didn't.
He's got a sketch.
Tender and plump with a nice springboard. What's
a
springboard?
Two layers. No, but Penelope Cruz had taken a photo of him and placed it on Instagram because they were tanning his butt in the makeup room. And he's like bent over like with his butt cheek hanging out, and the lady's like painting it. Yeah. And she's like, can I take a picture of this? And he's like, sure. Because they had to do the nude scene, which is when they were doing the promiscuous, and Versace tells him to go have fun and play with the little boy. And
I paused with
the young man, like, you know, the 20-year-old in the bed.
It would be nice every time I got naked to have a makeup artist just give me that. That would be nice.
You want full direction.
See, look at, I told you the chat room is like, Ricky's butt was beautiful. It had like, they put the lighting on there on purpose.
I'm sure
you know
he demanded it too. Make sure it looks good.
That'd be like if J-Lo showed her butt on camera. You know it's going to have the perfect lighting.
My God, as the biggest J-Lo fan. Yeah,
you're a J-Lo fan?
Go look at my Instagram at this moment. Literally on my Instagram, the only thing it says is biggest J-Lo fan ever, and then it says duh because I'm like kind of a mean person. I'm going to say about butts, while we're talking about butts, first of all, I could have seen more, and I understand it's FX, but FX usually goes there either way. I could have seen a little bit more of the intimacy, that's just me. Secondly, while we're talking about butts, although it was cool that I guess he had a tanned butt or whatever, I would have liked to see a non-tanned butt, because nothing sexier than a non-tanned butt where it's like dark skin on the back and then a nice plump, you know, pale
butt. Tanning marks?
Bonjour, Juliet. I do.
We are in Miami. Okay. Everyone's tan.
All right. Well, then that's the question of the day for the people that are watching our program. Do you like tan butts?
What's your preference?
Or, yeah.
Okay. Would you prefer Ricky tan or non-tan?
Or J-Lo in the next? No.
She makes no cameo.
No, but that was good that you mentioned that. The only other thing, did you have more to talk about with the butt?
No, it's just.
It's just good.
Everybody likes
really
booty. It doesn't matter if you're a girl or a boy. Everybody likes booty. No discriminatory there. That's why everybody hit squat rack. If you haven't hit squat rack, learn what it is.
PSA.
But in that scene, though, it's true that it's that storyline. I think we didn't really talk about it much. Is that there is that back and forth where, you know, Donatella is saying you need to be together, be a union, and they, you know, they're having multiple partners, and then Ricky Martin goes to him and he goes, "No, I want it to just be you and I." And it's funny because you're saying that. That's what he wants, but he's not really allowing it. He kind of tells him, like, that's what you're saying now, but will you say that in the evening?
Yeah, I think they had a back and forth.
Oh, and by the way, we loved that robe, remember?
Remember.
Oh, my God.
The white one?
The Ricky Martin robe.
Yes.
I mean, the Versace fashion is like another character in of itself in this entire series.
It really
series.
Is. It brings so much to the show. That whole house, him swimming in that pool, like, we all want to jump
the
into it.
The luxuriousness,
It's just, it's beautiful, but.
And the passion. I mean, that's one thing that I, well, two things I really got from this episode were the passion of Gianni Versace. Like, I want to go to design school now. I mean, just the way he spoke about having the passion hit the runway rather than just an idea of what people want.
I don't want to cut you off, but I don't want to forget. Yeah. Yes, when they were talking about that silver wedding dress, like the layers that he gave, like, obviously it sounds so simple and easy, but he was like saying, like, no, I will want her to have had many lovers and many failed lovers.
You're coming off the Madonna era of the virgin bride thing. And he's like, no, I'm not recreating that.
And just to think that what he thought, what did work, and, you know, these fabulous runway moments come from him saying to his sister, or probably there's probably other people who didn't agree with him, like, no, this is why I want it to be different, because as humans we are different.
Right.
And in an industry that we're always just trying to sell to, like, you know, everybody, and not having that, like, TikTok where you're like, no, this is what I want it to represent.
And, yeah. The crazy part is that message was just resonating now. So he was ahead of his time of wanting the model that looks like she enjoys life. You know, like that didn't resonate till years after where we went through that whole skinny era.
Right. And I thought it was really cool also is that sometimes people forget because they see someone at the top, but it's really hard to get to stay at the top. You know, getting there is one thing, but staying. And again, he has so much success. Look at his house. Look at the legacy that he's at a young age, honestly, he's already put together. But sister's saying, like, they're talking about McQueen a lot. That you have all this competition. And so it's, you always have to bring it. I thought that was really inspiring to see people always have to just give it their all and staying to their guts.
And it seems like his first goal is success, but also making himself the happiest. Yeah. Yes. And I think in that fashion industry,
sorry, I'm interrupting you, but making people happy. Yeah. He was like, my models, they wear my dresses and they need to feel life and feel happiness.
Yeah. So otherwise you're like going on this commercial curve. Exactly. And there is a quote that I've always loved. It's on my website. It's Rita Mae Brown, the activist. And it's like something like conformity will make everyone like you but yourself. And so I think within him, there's a part of Gianni Versace that's like, okay, I have to make myself happy and I have to make my models happy. That's therefore, it'll turn. And, you know, it'll be different. And, boy, it was.
But that wedding dress look was a good reflection of who he was as an individual. Yes, he was a gay man. Yes, he had a lover. Yes, he was living the lifestyle that he was living. And I took the veil as symbolism. Because he mentioned the veil needs to be behind the head. And usually you have the veil in front of your face, which shows some sort of innocence and coming to life. And now you're a unit as one. But this is no. She has it back. I am who I am. You're either going to accept the fact that I've had boyfriends and I've had lovers and this is who I am. And I am woman and I am power and this is walking this walk and talking this talk, or damn, you're just not going to like it at all. That's what I took it as. Yeah. Sorry. Got a little deep with it.
That was great. Yeah.
Exactly.
And
nailed
it. And ultimately, I think what I was gaining was like the passion, but like, this is really about family. I mean, these episodes have really been about family, family, family. His commitment to, well, the older sister we find out. Mm-hmm. Then we find out his commitment to Donatella. Right. His commitment to Antonio. It's always just been about family.
Because didn't he even have a conversation when he was kind of discovering his health? And, oh, Versace is nothing. I'm nothing without Versace. Yeah. And then something, he's like, but you will be.
Yeah.
We didn't even mention that. Yeah.
She was like, what is Versace without you? And he said, it's you to her. Right. She says, who am I without you? And she said, You'll find out.
And I thought that was so powerful. That's such a great brother, honestly, because it's in a way he's saying it's going to be okay, and you're just going to have to keep on moving forward. And I thought that was really, it was really dark, but really, really sweet moment. It really was.
I know we're running out on time, but I think so many valuable, you know, good story arcs here. But I do really, I wrote on the last bit of notes is like the time where they all went to Twist, not all, but Gianni went with Antonio. I really loved that scene because as we've been talking a lot and exchanging ideas of what and why and if Antonio wants to be promiscuous or what's right and what's wrong, it was a really good space. It was like they were going to the club as they always do, or whatever, or have done, and it just was this moment where they were like, you're enough. It was really beautiful,
we haven't seen enough of that because we've seen the love of him after he's dead, so I didn't really feel it until that scene that they really loved each other when they were together, and that moment I saw that real tenderness, that real,
I felt like I had to rewind it in my head because I was like, I remember saying to myself, oh, there was no like dialogue. Like, what actually was said? Right. But really, it wasn't. It was unspoken. It was a lot. And that club is, you know, Twist was a thing back then. So, it was done really well.
Are always, I feel like, the best moments in life and the best scenes on television when there's enough said. And just like the actors are able to convey those emotions like that. And I think they did a great job with it. Amazing. My question to you guys is do you think it's going to stick? Obviously, we know the fate of this couple. But from now on, from this episode till his fate, do you think this is something that's going to stick?
What do you mean, the love between the two of them?
The monogamy.
Oh, likely not.
Oh, the shade is real.
I know he said likely no.
Because when he said to him, what's your answer going to be this evening? He didn't immediately say, oh, what are you talking? Like, you know, he could have made the hard push. He didn't. Mm-hmm.
I think there'll be different variables. Is there any way where it could be they're in that same like direction, but it could sort of go off track? And I think those variables could be, you know, his health or just, I don't know. I guess there's no concrete answer on that. That's a very hard question.
Correct me if I'm wrong, there's 3 years, right? Because
that was 94.
That was 94, and then the thing happened, the murder happened in 97.
Yeah.
Well, that could happen 3 years. So I'm wondering, you know, it's if they're taking that relationship even to a next level where it's their committing even more to each other, it's even harder, right, to lose your partner 15 years when you've had the last 3 years where you've taken it to another step.
Oh, yeah, if the last 3 years were actually good.
And I also wonder what layers are, if we're going to be completely honest, I want to go what layers there are. So we're talking about them as two gay men in their non-monogamous, promiscuous situation and trying to vow to each other. But they also both are celebrities in some right. I mean, not both of them, but Antonio kind of is, and he is. I mean, let's even go off the level of, like, basketball players and their wives and the other, you know, girls in other towns. Like, I'm saying that I feel like they're going to stop being promiscuous, but I'm not saying that there's not going to be another person in the fold, if that makes sense at all.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
You know, because he's traveling, this, that, and the other. I mean, unless they were always together.
Well, we'll let that take us to predictions.
Yeah.
So. Oh, speed predictions. Running out of time.
Oh.
Oops. Predictions.
Ooh. We'll start with you.
Gosh, I predict that I think they're going to really try to be there for each other and kind of see where this monogamy can take them. Maybe we'll stick, maybe it won't, but I think we'll definitely see an evolution. And I think that no matter what, we are going to see on screen just this relationship develop more and more, and it just this bond being really, really strong, and just like them sharing this love story to us.
I feel like there's going to be definitely a vicious fallout between Donatella and Antonio.
Oh, easy. Sorry about
that. My bad.
No, it was good.
It's gonna show the hardships that he had to endure that I feel that she caused. Because...
Antonio?
That Donatella caused onto Antonio and how he deals with life after Versace. Mm-hmm. I'm very interested to see if and how Donatella pushed him out of the picture completely. Mm.
I think I'm interested in the Versace stuff. Mm-hmm. But going on to the next episode, you know, because there's a bunch, I feel like we're going to get a little bit more of Andrew's development. Mm-hmm. As we know, I believe it was Five Gentlemen, two were ones he knew. They weren't just random. And I think we're going to get into the ex-lover and the best friend. And I believe that all happened in Milwaukee. And up until this point, it's been hard for us to watch it as a viewer because he is, you know, a serial killer. And we're like also being in the moment because the show's done so well. I think next episode we might... not that we haven't had discussed with this human being for what he's done, but we're going to be looking at it from, like, the ultimate jealousy lens that he has. I mean, because when you see random, maybe he met Versace, maybe he didn't, killing, that's one thing. He randomly got the guy at the with the truck. That's one thing. These are all random. Yeah. But when it's two people that he had a life with, it's going to be really interesting. I'm also interested to see where Ronnie lies in the whole situation, in the sense that, like, he is on drugs. But, he, sometimes the people that are in their darkest time have a really good, like, mirror to you. But what I would want to see is just nothing but fabulous Versace stuff.
Right?
Yeah, I need to see Naomi Campbell and everything. You know, right.
That's a great point. Yeah. That's a great point because it's true that we... I'm excited, like, for a funeral. Like, think of, like, this man and this whole world. We haven't really seen all the people of that time that are really highly influenced.
Yeah. We need to see the most ultimate opulence and, like the music. Like, this music from today's episode was Easy Lover. It was one of them. Back to Life, Soul to Soul, Come On, like, the best song ever made. Ecstasy by Jocelyn Enriquez and Be My Lover. Like, I feel like we do, I don't know if it's the next episode, but we need one episode of just opulence. Like,
we're definitely going to get it, I'm certain. And I think we're going to see a sympathetic look at Andrew Conan. Because when I look at where we are now, just episode two, it's just dark and scary. So there's no way it can continue that way. We have to get a little bit of backstory on why this guy's got so low self-esteem, how that low self-esteem manifested itself into this. And I think maybe they'll give us something about maybe the way he was raised or his upbringing.
I think the childhood would be so strong. By the way, we for the viewers here and the iTunes people, we're not watching previews, so we're just kind of going off like what we feel.
So, so hopefully we'll get some more of that story. We are so glad you guys joined us again this week. We'll be back again next week.
Easy Lover.
As always, my name is Shaka Smith. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat at Shaka Strong.
Here's my dilemma. He's so fit, you know, Shaka Strong, not to be confused with Shaka Khan. And I'm the size of a Buick, so I always look so horrible sitting next to him. But anyways, that's for our iTunes people. You don't got to worry about that. My name is Ronnie Jr. My website is randomlyronniejr.com, and my Instagram that says I'm an avid J-Lo fan is randomlyrj. Thank you very much.
And I'm Russell Ray. You can find me across the internet at Russell Ray Silva or on my website, russellraysilva.com.
Hey guys, you can go ahead and follow me on Instagram at Bonjour Juliet.
And we'll see you guys next week.
Are we drinking next week?
Yeah, we are.
Executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff. We would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later!
The views expressed herein are those of the host only. Do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals. AfterBuzz TV.